This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Tom Homan, who joined this operation, tells me that they arrested about 90 illegal migrants here. This makes it the largest operation that we have seen under the Trump administration. Homan says this is part of a much larger criminal investigation. He called this phase one and something they have been planning for a while. Early Monday morning, HSI, along with special agents and Texas DPS, made the arrest in and around Colony Ridge, a largely Hispanic development outside of Houston. We sat down with Border Czar Tom Homan right after he joined that operation.
They were a targeted enforcement operation. We went with warrants on some people. Some were worksite operations, and others were traffic stops conducted by Texas DPS. The last number I saw was like 69 criminals. I know for a fact there were several sexual predators. I mean, child predators that were arrested for, you know, sexual misconduct with a child.
So Tom Homan speaking there. Of course, Border Czar has been getting the job done for the Trump administration, talking about the efforts that are being made to secure our borders and to make our country safe again. And you have to think to yourself, who in the world would possibly be opposed to what we are seeing Donald Trump's administration do, including through the efforts of Tom Homan? Well, let's talk about it with our friend Roy Murdoch, who joins us once again, a nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, and a Fox News contributor. He has an article in the Daily Signal right now talking about this. DeRoy, welcome back to the show.
Danny, great to be with you again.
Thank you. It doesn't seem like this is a difficult one. I don't know how you would look at the type of people that Tom Homan and his outfit is extracting from the United States and be opposed to it, yet it still seems as though a lot of people want to paint it as something other than what it actually is.
Yeah, you know, you've got all these folks who are, yanking their hair out and causing all sorts of difficulties, dragging their feet and otherwise, to prevent ICE from removing people from the country who are illegal alien criminals. And these aren't just shoplifters. These are people involved in robbery, armed robbery, assault, rape, child rape, and murder. And you've got people saying, well, you know, we have this sanctuary situation, so, you know, if some guy has been convicted and he's about to be released from prison or something like that, ICE will come in and put in what's called a retainer, which is called, hang on to that guy, we're going to pick him up and deport him. And they'll say, nope, we're just letting him go. Won't let you know when he's leaving, and off the guy goes. There's some guy in Massachusetts who convicted of faced three counts of aggravated child rape and three counts of forcible child rape by the name of Jose Fernandez Perez from Guatemala. And the Essex County Superior Court in Massachusetts basically said, all right, well, we're not interested in the ICE waiver. We're just going to let him go. That's July of 2022. And this guy was just, you know, walking around having a good time enjoying himself in New England until February 2nd when the Trump administration went in and picked him up. And now he's finally in ICE custody. But, he's just walking around having a good time because of the sanctuary laws and all these other things that let these people engage in even child rape and still be able to get away with it until, fortunately, we've got Trump and Tom Homan in charge now, and they're finding these guys and picking them up and sending them back home.
Thankfully. Yeah, I, you know, to me, it's the most frustrating. It's very pleasing to see that they're being able to get the job done and all that. But the frustrating part about to me is it really seems like it was just a choice, that all that needed to be done by the administration was choose to remove the bad guys from here and stop them from coming in. And I think we have a great indication that the Biden administration and the Democratic Party chose to put the United States in the peril that it's in right now.
They absolutely did. I mean, the fact that this border has been able to go from, I think, a high of roughly 13,000 people coming in a day under Biden down to, I think, on Saturday, 200 people. That's a 98% decrease in, 5 weeks, something like that. This is a situation, if Joe Biden wanted to, he could have closed the border. I mean, he could have done whatever it was that Trump and Homan have done and actually get serious about border protection, border security. And they didn't do it, and that's because they didn't want to do it. And I think their whole idea was, let's get as many people across the border as possible, let them break in, and then give them free services, free hotel rooms here in New York City, free food, free education, free health care. And I guess their hope was that these people at some point would start voting Democrat. And if some children get raped in the process and some people get killed and Lake and Riley gets wiped out, well, that's just, I suppose, collateral damage. And this is sick, disgusting, twisted, and gives us a sense of truly how evil the previous administration was.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. We're speaking with Roy Murdoch right now, a Fox News contributor, a nationally syndicated columnist. He's got an article on this particular topic in the Daily Signal. Personally, here in my home state, I, of course, work in St. Louis, Missouri, but I live in Illinois. The Chicago Tribune has an article out right now. It says, audit finds thousands were improperly enrolled in state health care program for non-citizens, while costs were vastly underestimated. The Tribune goes on to say, Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration vastly underestimated the cost and popularity of a pair of health insurance programs for immigrants who are not citizens that has ended up costing the state $1.6 billion since the initiative began in 2020. And I will tell you, as a resident in the state of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker is trying to implement a progressive tax now to help cover the costs of the deficit that they're in right now. I mean, J.B. Pritzker is one of the leading critics of Donald Trump, and he can't have his own house in order. I mean, I think that the tentacles of this illegal immigration have gone way, way deeper than people even realize.
Way deeper. And I'm sure there are people who are citizens of Illinois, citizens of America, who were born in this country, who have all sorts of health challenges and would love to have somebody help them out with their health care bills. And that money, $1.6 billion, can be used to help those people out, or be used to build new hospitals or new clinics, hire new doctors for medical research, what have you. And instead, it's going to take care of illegal aliens, well, at least non-citizens. But some are illegal, some of them, maybe some legal, some illegal, but certainly we should take care of American citizens first. And $1.6 billion, that's just one state. I'm sure you look coast to coast. This is probably somewhere in the scores, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of this money. This is going to people who, much of this money is going to people who broke into this country, including illegal alien criminals and, as I said before, child rapists, as I just discussed in the Daily Signal today.
Roy Murdoch speaking with us right now. Donald Trump said this today, too, during the press conference that was surrounding his first cabinet meeting. But he did highlight the fact, he's like, I want to make sure that this is clear. We want people to come to the United States of America, that we still want immigration, but we want it to be legal immigration. Do you think that Republican Party as a whole needs to talk more about the good kind of immigration? Or do you think that this is just such a big issue right now that the focus being squarely on purging the illegal immigrants who are here, specifically the ones who are causing this type of great crime like you've written about, that that's a prime focus?
I think you make a very good point, and the left is very, very good at this. If you say, look, I want to get illegal alien child rapists out of America, they'll say, why are you against immigrants? They're very good at this, and so they blow up that linguistic smokescreen and try to conflate the pressure we want to put and resistance we want to put on illegal immigration versus people who come here legally with passports, visas, permission, and they come here, work hard, and join the American dream as my mother and father did when they came from Costa Rica in 1962. And so I think it would help linguistically if we use the term illegal alien to refer to people who broke into our country and refer to legal immigrants for people who come here with permission and not use the term migrants, which is just a big, big mush. Who knows what that means? And it's sort of a PC term that I think covers up the fact that we have illegal people here. So I think people think, well, let's be nice. Let's not use the term illegal illegal alien because it's racist or something. Nothing racist about it. It's a legal term that is in the U.S. Code. The Supreme Court uses that term. And I think we should talk about illegal aliens who ought to be booted out of this country versus legal immigrants who come here with permission, who want to work hard and join the American dream. And as long as they come here with our welcome, I wish them luck. I hope that they succeed. I hope they make us proud and make this an even a greater country. And we, the first step is to use the right terminology, illegal aliens for the folks who ought to be booted and legal immigrants for those who should stay here.
I think that's a brilliant move. Take the immigrant word out of the illegal portion of it. I think that's a very, very smart thing to do.
And stop talking about migrants, because that's just, as far as migrants are birds who fly in here and then fly away, as far as I'm concerned. Migrants don't refer to people.
DeRoy, last question before we let you go. This is one of the main areas of what Donald Trump promised that he would do, which is to secure our country and make it safe again. Do you feel very confident about Donald Trump's progress so far, 1 month in?
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, he is doing a much better job than I thought he'd be able to accomplish, not just in terms of immigration, but in terms of so much else that he's attempted to do. The radical transparency, I saw something just the other day that in the first month he answered something like 1,014 questions, I believe, versus something like 114 on the part of Joe Biden. He's answered seven times as many questions, constantly available to the media. We've seen what he's been able to do on DEI, what he's been able to do on with the illegal aliens. Just yesterday last night we had the one big bill passed in the House, which means looks like this Trump tax cuts will be extended. His level of energy and focus and relentlessness are just amazing for a man of 78 years old. I mean, wow, imagine if you were 68.
Yeah.
Boy, this is just the busiest man of almost 80 years old I've ever seen in my life. I've got friends of mine, in fact, a very good friend of mine works on Capitol Hill. He happens to be about 26, 27. He's one of these people who needs a lot of sleep. He sometimes is sleep by 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. I told him, you better not go work at the White House because he will last one day. Trump will look at you and say, you're fired. So,
I
really
love
quite
that.
Something.
DeRoy, we appreciate you. Thank you for being with us today.
You bet. Great talk to you, Annie. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. He's one of these people who needs a lot of sleep. Is that a generational thing? I feel, have you ever, Brad, you probably heard this because you're up on internet lingo, probably the most of us, but like bed rotting. Have you heard of the term?
Bed rotting? Yeah.
Explain it.
Well, that's just when you lay in bed all day and you don't do anything and all you do is like scroll on your phone or whatever. So it's a combination of laying in bed and doom scrolling, which is just scrolling infinitely on your phone, not doing anything.
Here's the thing. That's like everybody's goal. It's like the day that you want to have. But you're a productive human being, so you don't get to do that. You dream of that day. Maybe, I think that my generation, being an elder millennial, probably Gen Xers, you hear of like, I'm going to take a mental health day. And you roll your eyes, but then you're like, but maybe I'll take a mental health day. Like, maybe I will take a mental health day. That wouldn't suck.
Those are the worst.
The difference here between these generations is that if you find yourself rotting in your bed, scrolling forever on your phone, covered up to your eyeballs and hiding from the world, you used to have the self-respect not to tell anybody about it. But this younger generation, Gen Z, is like, let's name it. And then we'll hashtag it on TikTok and tell everybody, I'm taking a mental health day, gonna go rot in my bed. For me, shut up. Just... You know what? If you've got to take a day, if you absolutely have to take a day, take the day. Doesn't need to have a name. Everything doesn't need to have a name. But when I hear DeRoy Murdoch say, this 26-year-old very good friend of mine in Washington, D.C., he's the type who needs a lot of sleep. Oh, that hits hard. You know what? I need a lot of sleep. I don't get it. That's why I need it. I don't sleep a whole lot. I sleep more than I used to. I started prioritizing sleep and figuring it out and taking a lot of melatonin. It's gotten better. I'm usually asleep now definitely by midnight. And that's not this. Every once in a while I get one of these things where I'm solving the world's problems at 3 a.m. Just not as much as I used to. Let's take a quick break. We're going to speak with Carrie Pickett next. I'm excited to talk to Carrie Pickett. She wrote an article in the Washington Times, and the headline here is very interesting. FBI is looking into James Comey's off-the-books honeypot operation targeting the 2016 Trump campaign. So we got a whole new situation at the FBI, and now they're pulling the curtain back. Are they going to find anything? What the heck is a honeypot? That sounds very interesting. We're going to find out from Carrie Pickett, the author of this article. She's doing the work. We're going to bring it to you next on the Annie Fry Show. Don't go away.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism, so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you concerned that it may get a test unlike any other if Donald Trump is reelected? I mean, when you think about a second Trump administration, what do you think the implications would be for the FBI?
Oh, serious. For the Justice Department and the FBI, because Trump is coming for those institutions. He knows their power, and I think he has regrets that he didn't work hard enough to corrupt them last time. So he's coming for them, and that's a danger for all Americans. He's going to put people in positions in those organizations. He didn't have all-stars the last time. He'll have the bottom of the barrel this time. But people who will want to do his will, and that should worry every American. This election matters. Because of a reason like that, people have to participate. You cannot sit on the sideline. I don't care how you feel about Joe Biden, you must vote for him because the consequences on the other side are too severe.
Well, there's James Comey just pleading with you, do not let Donald Trump win. Don't let him win. What's at stake at the FBI? Well, maybe we're about to find out, because it looks like the Kash Patel, FBI director now, is going to look into some of the things that took place in the past. And maybe that's bad for James Comey. Maybe it's not. There are people looking into this, and we wanted to speak to a reporter with the Washington Times. Carrie Pickett joins us now, and Carrie has written an article about the FBI looking into James Comey, and I can't wait to hear the story, Carrie, of what you've discovered so far. The White House correspondent for Washington Times. We appreciate you being with us here today, Carrie. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me, Annie. Yeah, I'd like to, you know, point out that this is a story that I originally broke back in October, and not just October, but October 29th. Ooh. Okay, and when was that? That was about 6 days before the election. So while a lot of, you know, people on X and, you know, a few people here and there picked it up, you know, not a lot of people really knew that it was out there. So the big change that really happened yesterday was the fact that we had the weaponization hearing that happened up on Capitol Hill, and you had Kash Patel, of course, he's the new FBI director, and then you had Dan Bongino, the new deputy director. So everyone's like, what is he going to do first? What is he going to do first? And all of a sudden, I say, oh, by the way, I'm hearing all of a sudden that we had this honeypot, you know, off the books operation that I reported back in October that was launched by Comey back in 2015. This predated Crossfire Hurricane. That was, of course, that was the Russia collusion investigation. Mm-hmm. That was 1 year later. Well, you know, you had Crossfire. You had this 1 year before that. This other investigation that was launched by James Comey, looking for something on Trump, anything on Trump that was launched by his team that was not put into the computer system, and they said, hey, let's send some honeypots into his campaign and just find anything on him. And some people say, well, you know, hey, he was in charge of the FBI. He can do that. No, he can't do that because there has to be some sort of predicated circumstances to launch, you know, an investigation into anybody. And at the time, there wasn't. So now we are finding out that Kash Patel is interested in looking into that particular off-the-books operation. Now, is it an official investigation? Probably not, but they are interested in it.
Oh, man. Carrie Pickett here with the Washington Times. So there's a couple parts of what you've just said there that I want to flush out a little bit more for people who might not be as fully aware of some of the vocabulary that we're talking about here. And the particular point that you said, they weren't sending these people in to investigate a specific crime. It was more of a fishing expedition, which you highlight in your article on the Washington Times. When you say honeypot, that James Comey was putting together this honeypot mission, what does that look like?
Okay. A honeypot, let me properly define that. It commonly refers to an undercover operative. Usually it's a woman, of course. Yeah, mm-hmm. it can mean anything these days. Who feigns a sexual or a romantic interest to get information from a target? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, we've seen that all the time in James Bond movies. Okay, and generally speaking, what we found here in this off the books investigation. By the way, in these new disclosures that were just dropped off to the Senate side, one of the whistleblowers didn't even want to call it an investigation that was launched by Comey. They are describing it as a scheme. Okay. And now there's not just one FBI whistleblower. There are many whistleblowers now that are calling out James Comey. And what is interesting here is that we are now finding out that one of the honeypots wasn't just a honeypot, but was also a handler of the undercover agents. So this is a very interesting development. I have a new story out today. I definitely go check it out at WashingtonTimes.com. And what we're finding out here is that this particular honeypot was also a handler of maybe perhaps other undercover agents who attempted, and perhaps successfully, to infiltrate Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. And that is a very interesting development here. Also, the first whistleblower tried to, inform, you had a special counsel, John Durham, and when this whistleblower told John Durham, the FBI found out about it and ended up retaliating against this whistleblower. And not only that, but John Durham ignored this whistleblower and didn't include this whistleblower's information about this illegal operation in his report.
Man. Oh, man. Well, you know, I'm really glad we were able to connect with you on this story because you've obviously been way ahead of it, reporting on it even before the election took place last year. We're speaking with Carrie Pickett. She's a senior congressional reporter for The Washington Times. I think that this is something that certainly has a lot of interest. It's going to have a lot of legs. And you're telling me, I'm reading here in your article that's on the Washington Times, you said the whistleblower agent, quote, personally knew, end quote, that Mr. Comey ordered an FBI investigation into Mr. Trump and that Mr. Comey, quote, personally directed it, end quote, according to the disclosure. So it seems as though there's going to be a lot to discover, to draw out with this investigation that will come from Kash Patel as he leaves the FBI. Do you expect a lot of this information to be made public quickly?
Probably, you know, I mean, I don't even know the timeline on this. I think right now you still have, it's only been a few days since Kash Patel was sworn in. It's only been a few days since Dan Bongino became deputy director. So you know, right now you have Senator Grassley's office, you know, just got the new disclosure. So let's give it some time and see where it leads right now. But I would imagine that you have Donald Trump definitely wants to know who these people are, because ultimately people need to know that the FBI culture still has old hands, old senior executives who are loyal to James Comey, who are loyal to former Deputy Director Paul Abate, as well as former Deputy Director Andy McCabe, and former director Christopher Wray. You know, people can say, yay, we have Patel in there, we have Bongino, but the culture is still entrenched with the old leadership, and they're going to have to deal with that first.
Well, the number one way, in my opinion, that this gets dramatically, quickly changed for everybody's good, the American people's good, is if journalists like you, Carrie, are able to look into this, expose it, report on it, so the American people can have their say. And I'm really grateful to talk to you. I hope that you'll come back on with us. We're going to watch your reporting on this and keep us updated as the story continues to unfold.
Sure thing.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Carrie Pickett, senior congressional reporter for The Washington Times. Very interesting conversation there with her. This is, I mean, to me, this is huge. If you're thinking about what Donald Trump has been saying for the years that he has been fisticuffs with the media, with the establishment, I mean, it's almost even grosser how Republicans have used the scandals that surround Donald Trump as a way to try to empower themselves, as a way to level themselves up. You've heard me say on this show, especially in the primary, I love Ron DeSantis. I have no problem reconciling my love for Ron DeSantis and my love for Donald Trump. My biggest concern in the primary was that Donald Trump would be able to overcome everything that was being thrown at him. I wasn't sure that that would be possible. Obviously, I was wrong about that. But Donald Trump has had to fight people off from the left and the right. And so much of it has been fabricated. And people like Carrie Pickett at the Washington Times, looking into something that happened in 2016, might seem like, is that really the best use of your time? You're gosh darn right. It is a fantastic use of her time. Because if you can prove at the very beginning, the genesis of all of this, that he has been fighting an incredibly unfair fight this entire time, that, to me, has huge implications for not necessarily the future of the Republican Party, because they can still screw it up on their own. But where have the Democrats been? Where has the establishment been? Donald Trump has always been competing against the system, the bureaucracy, the status quo. And at this point in time, he's winning. And I think he's winning big.
You almost have to ask the question when you see enough of this stuff, which we have now. We've seen it for 10 years, that they just keep doing everything possible to stop him. Why? Why him? You know, what is it about him that not even the left, but the establishment, the institutions, the agencies that exist, why were they willing to break their own rules, bend over backwards, become hypocritical even in their own eyes to stop this guy? Is it because of what he's finding now? You know, what is this next 4 years going to look like now that he's back in power and can investigate all these people who are willing to break all the rules to stop him?
I want to know everything.
Me too.
I want to know all of it. You know what I really... There is a real actual part of me, you know, like we should make a list of conspiracy theories that exist.
Okay.
We should start doing that. Start writing them down when you think of them. And then we'll throw some out. If we don't get to it today in the show, it sounds like a fun Friday thing to do. But just a list of conspiracies we'd actually have to make the list and we'd have to determine whether any of them have been solved or confirmed or whatever. But there are so many eyebrow-raising moments in the last 10 years. I'm really looking forward to some of them coming up and being like, that wasn't true. Thank God. But...
Well, that hasn't happened that much. That's what's unique about it.
Just today in the cabinet meeting press conference, Donald Trump's going on this tangent about questionable boxes. They're of ballots. They're there and then they're not there. Why are they not there? Where did they go? We have it, you know. He's saying these things, and I have to think there are people in the room going, nah, I could have done without that. Could have skipped that point. But I want the 100% unfettered facts so that Trump can stop saying that stuff. It's not true. But I don't. People will be like, oh, that's been debunked. I don't believe anything. I don't. If we're talking about going back to 2015, before Donald Trump was even the nominee, going back to 2015, and James Comey is privately, as the director of the FBI, sending in honeypots. And no, you cannot apply to be a honeypot, Ryan. Stop asking.
You don't have to apply.
Okay.
It just comes upon you naturally.
Is that why you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I've done a terrible job.
They've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah. I'm like 6 years into this. I haven't found anything.
You're like, I thought there were going to be honeypots.
You came
for
here
my
to...
sandwiches.
Yeah. You came some... here to catch Annie and you got me. How did that happen?
Oh, yeah.
It's not worked out well.
No.
But they're paying me, so.
Are they?
Yeah. The funding's about to go away, I can tell you that.
In oatmeal cream pies. It's like, say no more. I can handle this. To go back to 2015, that James Comey, to the point of what Kerry Pickett is saying here, the investigation did not appear to target a specific crime, but was more of what agents would describe as a fishing expedition to find anything incriminating against Mr. Trump. That is un-American. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you're trying to kick somebody out of the race to be vetted by the American people, true to be nominee, and then possibly president, why is that not treasonous?
It is treasonous.
Well, then... get him.
The thing that's like wildly underlying all of that is they're saying we don't trust the American people to vet their candidates. We don't trust you guys. You don't know what's best for you, and therefore you don't need to self-rule, self-governance, which is what the United States is built on.
Oh. Mr. Trump launched his presidential campaign on June 16, 2015, about a year before FBI opened Crossfire Hurricane. And this whistleblower, there are two whistleblowers, I believe. Or let's see, there's one. This talks about one. It says the off-the-books investigation launched in 2015 by FBI Director James B. Comey was revealed by an agency whistleblower in a protected disclosure to the House Judiciary Committee last year and first reported exclusively by The Washington Times in October by Ms. Kerry Pickett, who was just on the show with us, excuse me. In the intelligence community, a honeypot commonly refers to an undercover operative, usually a woman who feigns sexual or romantic interest to obtain information from a target for oatmeal cream pie.
I sort of went backwards. So I started with the what's the payment and I'll do whatever it takes. And then when I heard oatmeal cream pies, I'm like, well, what's that job?
Little Debbie.
Yeah. I had to
say no more.
Man, I had to make myself so much more attractive. Because they were like, you are not good looking enough to be a honeypot. I was like, well, you pay in honey oatmeal cream pies. It's your fault.
Yeah. Maybe you need to up your payment system.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. Let's revisit your Weekends America, some parenting tips. Is that what you got? All right. We'll do that when we come back. The YouTube live chat poll. Should Annie apply for the opportunity for a press pass at the White House now that Carolyn Leavitt said they're pretty much reshaping the whole thing and specifically said, we want the voices of local radio show
hosts.
Not yet. That'll be the next one. Gray-haired, middle-aged female.
Patriot AFs.
That's right.
That's what they said.
Right here. Go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote. I said if we get to 400 votes, I will begin the process today. We're at 337.
Yeah, so you got to vote.
337. Should I apply? Get there and vote. See if we can make it by the end of the show. We'll be right back. I don't know. People don't want me to interrupt them right now. They're getting down with the Rapper's Delight.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sing this?
Do you always think of Wedding Singer when you hear this song?
No, I think of my friend Aaron, who could sing this entire thing when he was 14. I bet he still can. He listens to the show a lot, too. And this is a test, Aaron. Let me know if you heard this. Can you just sing the song?
No, I don't. I mean, I've heard it 1,000 times, but I don't know a single word
of it. But a lady goes,
a hip, hip hop.
A hip to a hip, now a hip, hip hop, and you don't stop. Rock it to the bang, bang. Yeah, I totally. Then she pays him in meatballs.
I don't remember that part.
Oh, what?
Yeah. That was the...
She's like, you're so sweet, letting me pay you in meatballs. And then she puts a meatball in each hand. And he's like, you're welcome.
It's like a 17-minute song.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
Did you ever notice that all the adults in Adam Sandler movies are pretty much whacked out, screwed up weirdos?
They're funny.
And the kids are basically normal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That movie's The Wedding Singer, if you didn't catch that. You don't like The Wedding Singer. It's one of my favorite Adam Sandler movies.
It's where he jumped the shark for me.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say that because there are movies after that I still enjoyed. It was just that he blew my mind so much with Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore that when I went to see Wedding Singer, I was like, oh, no.
I don't know that was really for you. A lot of what he makes now is funny rom-coms.
I get it. And that's not for me. It definitely wasn't for me when I was 15.
Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison both are not romantic movies. There's a love interest in Happy Gilmore. I don't know that you would call it a love interest. It is a lust interest, more in my opinion, than Billy Madison.
Billy Madison, yeah, there wasn't much love there.
Want to touch the hiney.
Yeah, playing like strip trivia.
The only part of Billy Madison, I watched Billy Madison with my son. It was time. We fast forwarded through the part where where the teacher is tutoring him.
Yeah.
In the outside tent.
That's what I'm talking about.
I couldn't remember what happened. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to fast forward. And then I paused and Chris Farley was half undressed. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That is correct.
And now I'm like, now I'm really doing you a favor. We're going to continue fasting. That is
what did he think of Chris Farley? Like, he didn't grow up with Chris Farley. What does he think of Chris Farley?
He didn't have a big enough role. He's the bus driver.
So is that his only exposure to the man, the myth, the legend?
Probably.
Really?
I've never seen Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy's weird. It's funny, but it's not one that I'm like, oh, I really want to go watch that again.
It's been on the television. It's been carried on TV for so long, and I never, ever want to watch those movies on TV for the first time. Commercials and stuff, like, totally kills the flow. It's probably edited. I just never did. It's one of those that I need to sit down and watch. I'm always afraid that I'm going to see it, and I'm going to hate it because I didn't see it when it was relevant.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, I'm the person who doesn't like Tommy Boy.
Have you never seen it, though?
No, I've never seen it.
No idea if that movie
I like Tommy Boy.
Well.
I think it's better than Black Sheep, which I think is the other kind of him and David Spade movie that he did. But Tommy Boy I like.
Tommy Boy is a movie that I'm certain I would go watch, and there would be so many things that have been lifted out of Tommy Boy that I didn't know were from Tommy Boy.
Yeah. Fat guy in a little coat.
Fat guy in a little coat. See, I know
that. It's from that. Yeah. The whole speech about you can put your head up a butcher's butt and all that.
It's not.
People, it's hard to quote because he's misquoting his dad when he says it. But people quote it halfway all the time.
You want to go back to your list?
Yeah, I guess so. These are, once again.
We only did one.
I know. We got through one. Ways in which you are helping your kids be better and have better people skills.
The YouTube poll is up to 369 votes.
Okay, 31 more people. All right, the next one on this list, helping your kids process emotions, which when I read it, it sounds very modern and new agey, but it's very important.
Soft?
It does. Because it reads like this. They help their kids name and process big emotions.
How did your parents help you process your emotions when you were a child?
I don't know. They just listened. You know, if I had a problem, I think I could talk to them and they would listen to
it. Did you go to your parents
a lot? I remember talking with my mom a lot. And I'm sure I talked with my dad, too. But it's similar now, I would think, with my kids, where my kids, if they're having a really bad day, they want to go talk to mom. Because mom's going to be compassionate, listen.
Soft.
I'm going to hear it and go,
suck it up.
Well, here's the solution. And then that's about it. But you know, I knew that I could talk to them.
Did you talk to your parents?
Me? No. you asked Ryan how my parents are.
Did you talk to Ryan's parents?
No. But like my parents would always give me a reason to experience whatever. I'll give you a reason to experience whatever emotion you're experiencing.
If I have problems now, I go talk to Annie's parents.
I know. What the heck?
It's wild.
Yeah. It's just crazy the world we live in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
I have never had that conversation with my parents.
It might.
I don't remember ever having like deep, emotionally thoughtful, massaged out conversations with my parents. Would they have had those conversations with me? I think they loved me. I always knew that they loved me, even if I was a pill the whole time I was growing up. But I don't feel like that's where I was going to go to get help processing my emotions.
Well, now when you say it that way, me either. I wasn't like, oh, I'm having trouble with this. I think I'm going to go talk to my parents. You just don't do that.
It's imperative to me.
But I want my kids to do
that. My children feel that they can come to me and talk about literally anything. And that I won't judge them for their emotions. I've repeated this over and over and over again, but I've also, since I've repeated it, had multiple, almost every time I say this, somebody messages me as like, that was incredibly helpful. I read when Charlie was maybe two, I would get a monthly, probably, email from maybe Babies R Us. I don't even know. But they would say, your child is now 24 months. At this time, kids may be experiencing this. They've probably mastered that and they might be okay. So you go through this list of what happens at 2 months. But one time it said that your children are experiencing all the same emotions that you are, but they don't know how to handle those emotions yet in a civilized fashion. And it's your job as a parent to guide them from just being completely emotionally reactive to thoughtful in how they respond. And it's never about, I try to never, ever disrespect the emotion that my kid is feeling, or honestly, anybody is feeling, but I do want to get to the facts and the basis of it so that we can address what the problem is. And the example they gave is if you're eating an ice cream cone and the ice cream falls off onto the ground, you're going to feel ticked about that. And then you're going to go solve the problem. A child that doesn't know that there might be another ice cream cone that could be eaten on the other side of that dropped ice cream cone just freaks out and throws a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
You got to teach him to own the emotion. You're going to feel the same thing. You got to teach him to handle it.
Yeah. And give them perspective. There's another ice cream cone right over the rainbow, Junior. Number three is give them perspective. Actually, foster empathy and perspective taking. This is one that I do feel like I'm pretty good at, and I don't know if this is like a dad thing, but it is something that anytime my kids come to me, it's important to put their problem into the larger scope of life.
Yeah.
And
your problems are really big to you.
Yeah.
But let's open the view finder.
Yeah, it doesn't mean minimize the problem, but it does mean, so, and sometimes it's honestly just in light of eternity, buddy, you know, this is something that, do you think is a problem today?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a problem that's ongoing that we really need to deal with? You know, that kind of stuff.
And also, what can you do about it? Because if the answer is nothing, then we got to figure out what we're going to do next. No dwelling.
Yeah, I've been talking to my son quite a bit about it. He has trouble with playground rules that he's like, but these rules don't make any sense. And I'm like, buddy, you're right. Those rules are worthless. They're like rules for the sake of rules. And I said, now what? But what are you going to do about it? And that's what we're really talking through. Is I'm like, buddy, you're going to face rules that you don't think make sense for your whole life.
Mutiny.
So are you going to rebel against them? Because sometimes
take over the system, kid.
Sometimes bad rules need to be rebelled against.
I'd like to sit down with your child.
Other times, you need to find where's God at in it, because is he trying to teach you something bigger here?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just having those conversations right now, but I think that's all about perspective.
Yeah.
Getting to one more here. Encouraging problem solving on their own while also boundary setting. Boundary setting is extremely important for kids.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what those boundaries are, they it's like they crave them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we are a society that says no boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like if you've got a parent who is, there's a difference between suggesting to your kids what they should and shouldn't do and setting boundaries. It's like, no, I don't control my kid, but I do get to determine what is acceptable and what isn't. And when my child decides it's time to go cross my boundary into what is unacceptable, then that child has made a choice to incur the consequence of those actions. And it's my job as a parent to enforce consequences that are a deterrent from crossing that boundary line.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just make suggestions. Suggestions are not boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah, boundaries are important, not just for kids. I mean, but boundaries are important for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I creatively do better when I have a system to work within. Sometimes you rebel against that system, but it's part of the creative process.
Yeah, well, those are all good suggestions, I think. Let's take a quick break. 2 o'clock hour, when we come back, we're going to start making our list of conspiracies off air. If you've got some to suggest to us, we're going to try to figure out which ones have been determined and debunked. Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.